Lovely warm weather, not good for the hairdo. But anyway, we have a limited docket this morning, as it turns out, and we just normally we have time limits. Yellow light gives you 2 minutes. Red light says please conclude your argument unless the court is asking you a question. And though it's limited docket, we appreciate that self-restraint. And the other point I make is that we have read the briefs and the record excerpts. We are not necessarily acquainted with the whole record, so we do appreciate record sites when you can give them to us. The first case of the morning is number 21-30636, Seville versus Maersk Line. We'll hear first from Mr. Discon.
And before you get started, I have a brief message for law clerk Zach Meeker. Would you come up and get a message from Kim? You can proceed.
May it please the court, Tommy Diskin on behalf of Stacy Seville in her capacity as personal representative of Peter Wojciechowski. This is a case against Maersk Line Limited by the estate of Peter Wojciechowski. Mr. Wojciechowski was employed as an able-bodied seaman aboard the Maersk Pittsburgh, and on October 28, 2017, while in Bahrain, they were attempting to transfer or move the vessel from a dock to the dry dock. He was handling a major line, and when he was while handling that line, he injured his back severely. He was shortly thereafter, within a matter of a couple of days, diagnosed based upon an MRI with a severe L5-S1 herniated disc. He was flown back to the States and was attempting to seek medical care through the authority of Maersk Line Limited in their obligations to provide cure. He was having difficulty in getting Maersk Line to authorize appropriate cure for his back. In addition, he was given medications that may have influenced his state of mind to a certain extent. And 41 days later, on December 8, 2017, he committed suicide. Suit was filed on behalf of the estate. Suit was filed on behalf of the estate in the Eastern District of Louisiana, and it was filed on October 6th of 2020 against Maersk Line Limited.
Why did it take so long to file suit?
Your Honor, first of all, we had actually had some discussions about trying to resolve the case. There was difficulty in talking to some of the representatives because of the COVID issues that were pending or taking place. People weren't in offices and so forth. So that delayed us some time in doing that.
Well, excuse me, but COVID didn't really descend on us until 2020. So you had 2018 and 2019 to work on it, I suppose. Yep. Were you the lawyer throughout?
Sorry, ma'am.
Were you the lawyer throughout these?
I was the lawyer throughout, along with my co-attorney, Captain Robert Lanson. We had other issues that we were dealing with as well. Because he had committed suicide, we were talking to different experts and people to vet out the issues concerning the effect of medication and whether how that played a part, if any, in connection with the incident, just like any other attorneys would do to vet out the circumstances of a case before you just jump into it and file it. At the time we finally decided to go ahead and proceed with the case, we filed it in the Eastern District of Louisiana, knowing that 1406 existed. Okay? I knew 1406 existed. I went to law school and was taught by Professor Sponsler at Loyola Law School. And I remember to this day in a federal procedures course saying, if in doubt and you have a federal case with a federal claim, you file it in a federal court somewhere in the United States because it will always be transferred to the appropriate venue.
Did you think there was jurisdiction in the Eastern District of Louisiana?
sorry, say?
Did you think when you filed the lawsuit that there was jurisdiction in EDLA?
At the time that we filed the lawsuit, we figured there's a chance of jurisdiction.
And what was that chance?
Well, the chance wasn't a strong chance of jurisdiction based upon the current law and how it's developed in the last few years, especially on specific jurisdiction. That's changed tremendously, significantly. Over the past 30 years that we've been practicing law, 36 years, specific jurisdiction would allow these type of cases sometimes to be filed in various jurisdictions other than a jurisdiction where the company is based, okay? So, but 1406, and this is what you need to, 1406 is designed for those cases where there is not going to be jurisdiction and or venue, and I'll use those interchangeably because that's what it applies to. Its title is Cure or Waiver of Defects, and it gives the court authority to cure that defect. It says, even though you don't have jurisdiction, you have the jurisdiction to cure the defect, and you have the authority to do that. And that authority is, you shall, if it's lying in the wrong venue, the district court shall dismiss, or if it be in the interest of justice, transfer. It doesn't say may, it says shall, all right?
Also, the case law you're both sides are very familiar with is Dubin. Dubin cites a 1962 Supreme Court decision, Gold Law, something like that, that gets into the history of 1406. Until most of the current language was adopted, it was an automatic rule. The case was dismissed. There was no option to transfer. Then first version of what we see today was passed without the interest of justice. And then it was decided it was abused, this right. And because it was automatic, the interest of justice was added as a limitation to the right to transfer. With that sort of backstory, it seems to me that the law is clear that there is a concern of too automatic a transfer, that the court's role is not to always be open for mistakes that should be avoided, and in fact there are penalties for mistakes of where you file, and there's a compromise in 1406A. And what is your best factual argument that justice demands on our abuse of discretion standard us to overrule what the district court decided to do in this case?
The functional purpose of 1406A is to eliminate impediments. 1406A presumes and presupposes that there is an impediment. That's what it's there for. 1404 was created when there isn't an impediment to jurisdiction or venue. You would have to go through a 1404 analysis into that. 1406 says no, there is no jurisdiction. There's not likely to be jurisdiction. There is no jurisdiction, period. Whether it's jurisdiction by that there's no chance of there being jurisdiction, whether it's jurisdiction because of some oversight or misinterpretation, it doesn't dictate or go into those details, and it doesn't have a detail on them. The purpose of 1406 is to eliminate impediments and cure those impediments to moving forward, and it's to timely dispose of cases and controversies on their merits, not on some preliminary issues or motions that are filed.
Just wondering, where did Mr. Wojciechowski, or however you pronounce it, where did he live?
Mr. Wojciechowski lived up north, in northeast.
Pardon me?
In the northeast, up in near Virginia.
So what's the plaintiff's connection to the Eastern District of Louisiana?
Well, Your Honor, there isn't a connection other than that we actually practice here, okay? And we assumed, based upon the law that was in 1406, and in past experience in having dealt with occasionally 1406, the cases were transferred to the appropriate jurisdiction.
Well, let me just point out to you a Fourth Circuit case, Stanifer, 564 F3rd 455, where Judge Doherty makes a contrast between two cases. And in the Stanifer case, which was before that panel, she said Stanifer failed to offer even one reason, plausible or not, for filing in what was obviously the wrong venue, and no reason at all for failing to file in the proper district. And therefore, the panel concludes 1406, the interest of justice, does not justify extending the statute of limitations.
That's correct.
So normally this court does not disagree with other circuit courts, so how, if at all, would you distinguish Stanifer?
Well, Judge, in reviewing the case law that I've researched and was familiar with before this issue even became an issue, the Fifth Circuit has never adopted that or stated that principle that you've just stated to me from the Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit has taken a similar position. The Second Circuit has taken a similar position. And we point that out in our reply brief, that all of the cases relied upon by the defense are outside the Fifth Circuit that state that give that additional they make it a prerequisite that you've got to show a colorable basis for the reason of filing the initial suit in the location where you filed it. And that's the other jurisdictions, but the Fifth Circuit has always said no.
So it's okay for your law firm to file any suit at all in the district where you practice and place the burden on the defendant to transfer to the proper venue at any time. Is that what you think 1406 says?
Well, Judge, in the past, we've had cases with the Standard Club, which is Mr. Tompkins represents the Standard Club. We've handled a lot of maritime cases in the past. In some of those cases, we've agreed that the jurisdiction would be waived. It is a waivable defect. Venue is a waivable defect. Matter of fact, 1406B.
So you're saying yes to my question.
I'm saying yes to your question because there's always a chance that they waive. But there's always a chance that they waive the jurisdiction themselves, and then they decide to proceed.
Sorry, but the federal courts don't work that way. The law of venue and jurisdiction is that you have to file, you're supposed to file suit where there's proper venue to begin with. You're not supposed to sue on the come in the hopes that your compadres in New Orleans are going to persuade their lawyer. I mean, that's acting in the interest of the lawyers and not the law.
Judge, I don't think that it happens as much as you think, that people just go file suits and hope that it gets transferred. In the interest of justice has been described by the Fifth Circuit as being a situation where a suit has been filed timely. So what is the harm to the other side? Prescription is not an issue. They were aware of the case. They're aware of it pending. They're aware of the suit being filed. And all it is a matter of making sure it's on the right track in the right jurisdiction.
Well, if that were true, we could do away with a whole lot of lawsuits following International Shoe. And, you know, it may be that a couple members of the Supreme Court want to do that where you have big companies. But in the most extravagant, I mean, what's your best case for this theory?
Well, the best case for this theory is that number one, in the interest of justice, you're dealing with a ward of the Admiralty Court, a seaman who's a ward of the court, who filed his case timely within the prescriptive period, and the harm that's occurring in this case, there's more harm that's going to occur to the seaman than it's going to occur to anybody else. All that had to happen was for this case to be transferred. The judge, in reading the opinion that he wrote, added a new prerequisite that has not been announced and that was never stated in the Fifth Circuit. Some of the other circuits have stated it. I was not aware of it because we filed it here. But so in relying upon what the law stated in the Fifth Circuit for Ms. Seville and Mr. Wojciechowski, it becomes a weighing. Is it more fair to just dismiss his case, even though the law said that it was appropriate to do so? The statute says it shall dismiss and or transfer. It doesn't say may, okay? And so I followed exactly what the statute said. And I think that we proved, it was obvious and it was argued in our papers, that judge, if you dismiss this case, which took almost a year for a ruling on that alone, then it was going to be unable to be brought again because it would have been prescribed at that point. So those issues were proved from the standpoint of the Fifth Circuit. We showed that it was in the interest of justice because it was going to be dismissed. And the court, by instruction of 1406, shall dismiss and or transfer if it's in the interest of justice. So we proved those elements, Your Honor.
Also, let me ask you, is there, one of the things Dubin quotes from the Supreme Court, is that 1406, at least in part, is to address the problems of the uncertainties of proper venue, and that a mistake based on those uncertainties, as a result of those uncertainties, will not cause a loss of the claim. I don't hear that you're relying on any uncertainties that Louisiana might have been a proper location for this suit. You're not arguing that you were uncertain, that there was something about the Eastern District of Louisiana that made it a proper venue. Seems to me the only uncertainty is whether the other side would waive the absence of proper venue.
Is there something wrong with relying or hoping?
Let me ask you the question, though. Maybe the question went on too long. Well, they often do on my part.
Sorry.
What was the uncertainty, if any, as to venue in the Eastern District, Louisiana?
Well, there's always a chance of being in an improper venue. And if they're not being jurisdiction, we encounter.
Do you have anything about this case that would be reasonable to believe that the Eastern District of Louisiana was a proper venue?
Based upon the research and the motion that was filed, it was our conclusion that it was not likely to be found that there was a suitable venue here in Louisiana. Okay? After we looked at their filings and everything else on the motion, that's when we made the conclusion that there was not likely, and that's why we conceded to the judge at that point, because we looked at the law and looked at their briefing and found that, and we looked, and that's what we looked at. But ahead of time, in past experience, I have always either had a chance of jurisdiction or at the release, it's then transferred in the interest of justice if it was a prescription issue. Now, if it wasn't a prescription issue, then it would be dismissed and we'd simply go refile somewhere else.
All right, counsel, you've answered my question. Thank you.
We would ask the court to reverse the district court and found that there was an abuse of discretion, that 1406 dictated that he shall transfer the case in the interest of justice, and we made that proof at the time of the district court.
You have time for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Walsh, Ms. Walsh.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Taryn Walsh, and along with Peter Tompkins, I represent Maersk Line Limited in this litigation. So, here, there's no question that Section 1406A allows Judge Guidry to do what he did, which was dismiss the suit without prejudice. And there's likewise, from the case law, no question that district courts are afforded wide discretion in deciding whether to dismiss or transfer under these circumstances. So the only question left at this stage is whether the district court clearly abused that wide discretion in deciding to dismiss the case instead of transfer. And here, as has been touched on, this is a suit that was filed in a district where there was no connection to the parties or the suit. And so we would submit that with the relevant federal jurisprudence on the topic, that he was well within that broad discretion to have dismissed.
Taking this, roughly these facts, but changing as necessary to respond to my question, mm-hmm. What would require, in the interest of justice, what would make it error not to transfer in the interest of justice when improper venue exists?
It seems from the circuit decisions that have been alluded to so far, like Stanifer, as well as the Nichols decision, and even the language from Dubin earlier, that where there was some a level of diligence exhibited by the plaintiff in choosing where to file and evaluating that decision in the context of the jurisdictional landscape at the time.
It's a, Maersk Line is a shipping line, right?
Yes.
Could they not have arrested the vessel if it came into port in New Orleans?
Yeah, I suppose, yes, they could have.
When you filed the motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, did they have any response? What was their response factually to the motion to dismiss in the trial court?
The plaintiff's response?
Yes.
Oh, yes. They conceded that there was no personal jurisdiction in the court, and their response was only to oppose the motion with a request to transfer. So in line with the language of Section 1406, when personal jurisdiction is lacking, dismissal is the default, and then transfer is permitted only when it is in the interest of justice. And as the plaintiff being the requesting party for that transfer, she bore the burden of showing that it was in the interest of justice. And with the language from the Dubin decision that was mentioned earlier, that at note 5, the court emphasized the Gold Law ruling and emphasizing that the diligence of the plaintiff was a consideration in conjunction with Section 1406, with the court having stated, quote, "It is obviously not in the interest of justice to allow Section 1406 to be used to aid a non-diligent plaintiff who knowingly files a case in the wrong district." And while the Fifth Circuit has not spoken directly on this issue in recent years, other circuit courts have looked to that language from Dubin and have echoed it, really, such as the Stanifer decision mentioned earlier, where dismissal is proper and the district court does not abuse its discretion, where the complaint and pleadings lacked an arguable basis for having filed there in the first place.
I don't see in our case law any particular standard. There's a language you and I have both quoted out of Dubin. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that the law of the circuit has already established that absent a good faith basis for believing it was proper to file suit in the district where filed, absent that kind of good faith belief, dismissal is required?
Not required, but that a district court does not abuse its discretion in deciding to dismiss under those circumstances. I think I believe it was the Fourth Circuit's Nichols decision that made that distinction, that it wasn't necessarily a requirement, but in that situation, the district court is well within its discretion.
Let's say the district court had made the opposite ruling in this case and transferred. Would you have an argument here on appeal to have us set that aside as an abuse of discretion? I'm not saying would you have done that, but would that be a valid argument, that it was improper because there was no basis initially to file in the Eastern District?
I think in light of the surrounding facts, the argument could have been made, especially with some of the language that's discussed in the briefing, just with diligence and how that ties into the interest of justice.
Normally that wouldn't be an immediately appealable decision, would it?
No, Your Honor.
I think. Did plaintiffs, and I should have asked them, not you, did they allege that Maersk Line was unduly delaying the matters before, such that limitation, the clock was running?
I don't believe so. I don't recall.
I think this was the first thing the defendant did was file a motion to dismiss, right?
It was, yes. The motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction was the first responsive filing. And in the complaint as filed, plaintiff had alleged that Maersk Line is a Delaware corporation with its principal place of business in Virginia. So those two facts alone would mean that Louisiana is not a paradigm forum under the current state of general jurisdiction law. And similarly, they also did not allege that any facts that would suggest Maersk Line to be essentially at home in this district either. So the complaint itself did not contain a basis for the exercise of general jurisdiction. And then, as it was mentioned earlier, the underlying occurrence at the root of this litigation occurred aboard the Maersk Pittsburgh when she was berthed in the waters of Bahrain. And the complaint likewise did not contain any fact or mention of a connection to Louisiana. And in terms of the cases cited by the plaintiff in the briefing, those largely contained only venue defects, and a lot of those, the fact patterns did contain at least some connection to the state of Louisiana, or not necessarily Louisiana, the forum in which it was filed at that time, which at least provided for some basis for having filed there in the first place. And then there is a district court decision within our circuit as well that is analogous here that we did touch on in our briefing. That's the Brumfield versus TransUnion. It was Judge Fallon's 2020 decision, and he looked to some of the principles that we've discussed so far on the diligence of the plaintiff and taking steps to determine whether a forum is a proper one prior to filing.
Mr. Diskun mentioned that sometimes lawyers file in jurisdictions that they know to be, aggressive positions, and that the other side will waive any contest. Are you aware of that in the practice of admiralty injury litigation?
Where
a plaintiff will file a case in a location that does not have obvious venue, and the defendant will waive the error.
Yes, so personal jurisdiction defects can be waived, of course, and yes, in depending on the facts of a particular case, if there is some connection to the district or to the forum, then.
There's little. Do plaintiffs file, as here, with little or no connection to the forum? And in your experience, do the defendants waive those patent errors?
I can tell you in my experience so far, I have not had that where there's no connection to the suit, but. That would just be my experience. So the appellant is effectively asking this court to hold that transfer of the case is automatic as long as the plaintiff files suit in some federal court, no matter which one, by the date upon which the statute of limitations runs. And here, as we've covered, there is no connection to the forum in the first place. And in factual situations analogous to this one, including where the lack of jurisdiction was conceded at the outset when challenged, at least the 2nd, 4th, 6th, 7th, and 9th circuits have all found that the district court was within its discretion in deciding to dismiss instead of transfer. And Maersk Line, I respectfully submit that Judge Guidry was correct in his ruling and within his discretion in dismissing, and would request that this court affirm. Any other questions I can answer?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Diskin.
I was intrigued by the comment that Judge Jones repeated that you had made earlier. There's nothing in the record. I'm not sure what we could do with it, but it does seem to me your position is that it's not uncommon in the Eastern District of Louisiana to allow a case like this to proceed and for a shipping line like this defendant to waive any defect. But is that your position?
I've done it in the past, Judge. Yes, it is my position.
Against this particular defendant?
We've actually had with the Standard Club, who
Standard what?
Standard Protection and Indemnity Club, the insurance company. In the past, with Mr. Tompkins, we've had a similar arrangement where we set up a deal where we agreed that we would pursue the litigation here in the Eastern District, even though it was not the appropriate, overall appropriate location for the litigation to proceed.
Well, even if that is the culture of the Maritime Bar of Eastern District, is there anything we can do with that as in this case?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I mean, we can't exactly prove that is the approach often taken, but even if it is, what can we do with that possibility in resolving this case?
Well,
how does it affect what we do in this case that lawyers often agree?
Well, we just heard the argument. The different circuits around the country have mentioned the law stating that you need to show that there's a colorable basis for bringing the suit in the district court where you originally filed it. The Fifth Circuit has not said anything about that or ever adopted that position. I'm relying and filing a claim for Mr. Wojciechowski and his wife, his surviving wife, based upon that law. And now I'm hearing in the interest of justice, I should have looked at the law in the Seventh Circuit or the Fourth Circuit or the Second Circuit, not the Fifth Circuit. And had I known that this was a law that the court was going to, was a position of this court, I would have taken every step possible to not be before the Eastern District of Louisiana and filed in Virginia. But that's not what the law said at the time.
What about didn't Judge Fallon rule?
I think that decision was after we had already filed and after everything, and it came out later on.
Well, you know, I mean, my understanding is that a lot of the judges in the Eastern District pay close attention to their colleagues' rulings, so that might have been sort of a signal to you, and Judge Fallon is certainly a very smart judge.
And I agree with you, Judge, but I think that was after we had already partaken in this case that he had maybe made that comment about the law of the other circuits. It wasn't something that I was necessarily aware of being a district court case, but in following the Fifth Circuit cases and having briefed this issue on similar reasons in a different case previously, I felt like I was up to date on all the law when this issue came up. I want to show you one example of a case. I just did some research last night saying, okay, let's see if in the Eastern District or in the Fifth Circuit, any cases that have come out on 1406A. In Ellis versus Police Department of Irving, okay, which was a motion to transfer case, and it was a brutality case against the police department. The site is 2022 Westlaw 323970. And in that case, the court said there was no chance that the plaintiff was going to have jurisdiction in the court that the suit was filed. And the court didn't look at the fact that it was going to be, that there was a colorable basis for filing the suit there. The court said under 1406A, I'm going to go ahead and transfer the case to the city of Irving where the police department was that was involved in the case, and that would be the appropriate jurisdiction. They conceded that there was no chance of it being heard in that case in that jurisdiction.
Well, you're welcome to file that as a 28J letter with us.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, I would ask that we offer this case to you. Ellis versus Police Department of Irving. Should I furnish it to the clerk when I'm finished?
That would be fine.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and I would ask again that 1406 is a cure or waiver of defects, and it cures the impediments, and it says that the court shall, and I would implore you to reverse the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. This doesn't indicate how we would rule on the case. Ms. Walsh, you were probably as nervous as most lawyers are who doing their argument, but the fact that you're smiling all the time really is impressive. We appreciate it.